Hey, this is Jeff.
Hey, this is Ram, and welcome to the first episode of Future Majority, a podcast series that showcases the career paths and stories of leaders and other various personalities who've come from diverse backgrounds in a direct interview format.
This is our first episode. I think we're pretty excited. It's been a couple months coming. Our first guest is Elena Watko, who you may know from the CTV show Jan, where she plays Kale, the agent of Jan. And yeah, you might have also known her from Canadian Idol. She finished sixth in, I think, the second year of that show. She's been on Schitt's Creek, which Canadians are obligated to love. She's been on other shows like Hudson and Rex. And actually, she's now filming Easter Sunday, which is a movie based around Joe Coy, a stand-up comedian. And the whole story, the whole cast is Filipino, which is a really big, I think, step forward for that community. And Elena's super excited to be on it. What did you think of the interview, Ram?
Yeah, no, I thought it was great. She was super positive, and really it was an added bonus for us because she's actually a Queen's grad. So on top of hearing, about her experience in film and television, it was really nice hearing her experience at Queen's and, how she's worked her way up.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's great messages about like diversity and just having different people in your life and just moving forward and creating. And yeah, you can see how she sort of succeeded in what is traditionally known as a pretty tough career, not everyone makes it. So yeah, if you guys like this episode, please subscribe and follow. We're on all the major podcast networks, Spotify, Apple, everything else. Thanks. We'll just throw it right to the episode. All right. Well, Elena, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Jefferson. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for coming on. Elena, we go way back, but I think you're pretty well known now around Canada, and we're really excited to have you on.
Jeff, that's like one of the nicest things you said.
Yeah, I'm not always nice to Elena.
You're not very nice to me. Yeah, we stay friends.
That's nice.
You know why? Because now we're on the air and people are listening, so now you have to be nice to me.
I'm professionally obligated.
Yeah. That's good. I like it.
So thanks for coming on. I think you have a really unique perspective to bring on your career because you have a little bit of a different career than most people in Canada, I would say. You're seen on TV, you're heard on the radio, although maybe not as much on the radio anymore. Are you heard on the radio though?
There. See, we had to, I was waiting. I was like, hey, he's talking about, he's giving me accolades. Something's going to happen. There it is.
No, are you on the radio though?
No, I've never been on I've talked on radio like stuff, but my music's never been on the radio.
All right. No. Well, that wasn't meant to
thanks
be.
Thanks for mentioning that though. Let's talk about other things I haven't done. Cause yeah. You're running out of nice things now.
But anyways, I think you have a really interesting perspective to bring. Our podcast is about careers of, I guess, underrepresented groups, and you've had a different path than most people in your industry, I would say. So the first question, and a question that I want to ask all our guests, is where are you from?
I am originally from Vancouver, British Columbia, and so that our listeners know, We known each other since we were 16. We went to brother sister schools, so this is why we're mean to each other because we're siblings. But yeah, I was born and raised in Vancouver. I went to Queen's University right after high school. I graduated. I started in biology to make my mother happy, and then. And I changed my major in my second year. It was after the summer of Canadian Idol. You can kind of, put the, it makes sense. I changed my major and I graduated with a major in drama and a minor in women's studies. And from there, I moved to Toronto, started working. I was doing a lot of theater at the time. I was working, all over the country. I wanted to work at every theater company across the country. I just wanted to work everywhere. I have gotten to work back in Vancouver. I did a couple shows there. I'm actually heading back there now. I'm flying tomorrow to go back to film a film there. But right now I live in Toronto with my husband and my beautiful dog. And I'm so thrilled that Jefferson has moved back to Toronto from China so that we can hang. Well, not hang because of, you know, the stay-at-home order and COVID. But we, in the times when it was legal, we like had some really great times. And we also have been able to play some great games of Settlers of Catan, which is, actually that's a lie because you had a freeze on your iPad, which was really disappointing last night that you couldn't play.
The app is not very good. It's, Settlers, what is it called? Yeah. Catan Classic or something?
Catan Universe.
Catan Universe. It's not very good. I don't recommend it, although the game is fun.
I would like to tell your listeners that I do recommend it, that it is a great, it's a great, like we're addicted now. Brandon and I are now addicted, but we now have a rule, like no Catan in the bed because then we'll go to bed angry. Yeah. Because I beat rule. Him and then he gets mad and he sleeps on the couch. It's dumb, but it's, I recommend it. It's a great quarantine time passer thing.
Yeah, for sure. So you talked a little bit about your coming up through Canadian Idol and your little bit of your filming and sort of media history? No, your filmography maybe.
Yeah.
But do you feel like you fit into your industry? Have you ever felt like you fit into your industry?
Yeah. It's never been a question about whether I fit in. This is like what I love to do. It's the only thing, it's the thing, this is why I didn't continue with biology and become a doctor like my mom wanted. Like, this is the thing that always lighted me up. I think you knew that too, Jefferson, us growing up, that like when I was doing the school musicals and like getting to perform like that, it music, singing, like all of that was what lit me up and got me my passion, my fire going. So really like I knew I was like, you know, if I have to like live out of my car just so I can try and make a go of this, like I'm going to do it because this is what makes me happy. So it's never been a question of fitting in because I just knew I was going to make it work no matter what. I would hustle and I'm still hustling, like the hustle never ends. So I've been very lucky that, you know, I've worked with incredible people and I've been able to work as much as I have. So yeah, like I do feel a fit. I mean, I think the theme of this podcast is talking about, you know, how minorities, specifically like racial minorities, have navigated their way through their careers and roadblocks and that sort of thing that comes up, right? I never wanted to use my ethnicity as a roadblock in anything. I think that's, I remember like, you know, when I was starting in my 20s and I'd have minorities and it's easy to, oh, it's so hard to get work. Nobody's hiring us. Nobody hires people that look like you and me. Like a lot of people would say there would just be a frustration about that. And I never wanted to mentally go down there because that just never served me or will serve anyone by going down that train of thought. It's better to change your perspective and look at what can be done instead of what can't. I just kind of forged my way.
Do you feel like that's affected you in the decisions that you've made and how you navigated certain situations though? Because you acknowledge that it's there. You just sort of maybe try to block it out in your head is what you're saying, right?
It's so much of this career is a mental game. You know, like I'm sure a lot of careers, but particularly like the acting entertainment industry, so much of it is a mental game. It's, you know, if you have any fears or hesitations or you want to hold yourself back because, you know, you feel like you're the only minority in the room, then you will walk into that audition like a small person that doesn't deserve the job. Then you will go on set and behave small and not do your best work, then you will not get the opportunities because you're holding yourself back. Very like more so in and anything else. Sorry, I got to close this chat window.
So do you feel like, I guess what's different in your industry than most other industries is that looks do play a part in it, right? Like, so if you apply for a job as a, whatever, account manager at a bank, they have to aggressively push back on any kind of that, you know, anti this group or that group kind of thing, right? But, and looks don't matter, at least that's what they tell you. But in acting, it definitely does matter, right? I don't think that's really a question.
It's tricky, that one, because it's a misconception. Like, I would actually disagree and say that, like, with a bank manager, looks do matter. That how you present yourself when you go into an interview for a job does matter. If you want, it's like you got to dress for the job you want. So if you want to be a manager or someone like a high exec or something, you got to go in looking your best. And it's not just the clothes you wear and how much makeup you put on; it's the confidence that you bring, there's the confident look. Someone will pick someone that looks confident. I do think it does play a part in more than just in the acting industry. What's so great about like what I do is the amount of diversity in diverse stories, that they're looking for all kinds of different looks. However, you know, look on the TV, the majority of the people like in the lead roles have that kind of that look.
Right.
Like, as an example, when I was, you know, I was in two Christmas movies last year. All my friends were in Christmas movies. This is the thing, these Hallmark like Christmas movies. And all my white friends were playing the leads and were on the poster. All of my minority friends were playing the best friend.
Right.
And I played two best friends. And that's just, that's the aesthetic for that network. Right. Still, I mean, still you're seeing a lot of white led stories, but it's changing. There is a shift and I'm seeing like more diversity and realizing that it's actually more exciting when you have the more diverse your cast is and the more diverse stories you can tell, the more interesting and more fun it is. More people will tune in.
For sure. So you've played, if I remember correctly, Snow White. And you
I
were
did.
Snow White.
Yeah, so that was like my first theater gig.
But was there like any kind of conversation at that time around like, oh, but she's Asian and Snow White is supposed to be, I mean, traditionally in like storybooks, she's some kind of
Snow White.
European, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I feel it was theater. Theater is, I feel like theater, they're more willing to mix it up. And it was a panto. It was it's a pantomime. So it's outrageous and it's with kids and there's all kinds of things. So it really wasn't, I think if anything, it was wow, that's great that Elena's going to get to be Snow White and be on the posters and people will see an Asian girl like as the lead. For kids, that was like a really big deal. I've seen like Black Dorothy's in Wizard of Oz. I've seen Asian Belles in Beauty and the Beast. A lot of the leads on Broadway too are diverse, or they're changing, like, you know, changing the diversity around. So I find that it's actually been trickier in film and TV. It's much more, I've been not able to audition for roles. They say, we are open to all ethnicities. And then I, you know, you submit and I'm like, oh, the casting director liked me. Like, did I get an audition for this part? And they're like, actually, this is a historical, thing. There were not really an Asian, it wouldn't really fit ethnically if there was an Asian person playing this part. And I'm like, okay.
So like Ariel, the new Ariel
is black. Yeah. It's great. Like especially in the land of make believe and, you know, I think we're starting to see more of it now. Yeah.
What's funny is that in Shanghai Disneyland, all the princesses are still white and they import them from, I guess, Anaheim or wherever.
No, I went to Hong Kong Disneyland and there were Asian, like Asian princesses and it was really exciting.
Really?
I
went to the Shanghai one. There were only white princesses.
They imported white people to go to Disneyland?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. One of my friends, One of my friend's girlfriends was a Disney princess.
Like no. In the
park. Yeah.
No.
But I think maybe also it's like, there is a certain expectation, I think, that people want to see what they saw in the movie, which is like, maybe like the movie was made, what, Snow White was made in like the 30s or something. And that there was no diversity initiatives back then. So,
no.
Yeah. So maybe that's just, it's sort of, we're in this weird.
That's so interesting. Maybe. I would think that Disneyland is for kids. And so it's more exciting when kids get to see themselves as a princess. That they like, I think that's more like, that's an adult thing. You learn that stuff. That adults want that's things true. To be the same. And you want to see the white thing. It's kids have way wider imaginations. Like I can see myself. Look, when I was little, I saw myself in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Like I was like, I am Buffy the Vampire Slayer. That is a white girl with blonde hair, but that is me. Like that's me. So this is the thing. Like, why can't you have like an Asian or a black person or an indigenous person in the central role? And you can have white girls being like, oh, that's me. That's me. Like it totally works. You know?
I mean, I agree with you that it is learned, but at the same time, I've shared with you this video of this little Asian girl pointing at Philippa Hsu in the Hamilton movie.
Yeah.
And saying, I'm her.
Even I love that.
She could have picked any of the girls, right?
Yeah, it's an emotional thing. Especially when you've been seeing so many white princesses and then you see, oh my God, that's me. That's like when I went to the Philippines for the first time. I was like, whoa, they're all like me. I'm not the only one. And it's like, wow, have I really spent this long like not being around other Filipinos? Like, you just don't realize it.
Well, I think I told you this, but I realized when I came back, only after I came back from China, that I was a white male in China. Whatever a white male gets to do here, I got to do it in China because I'm the majority male.
Because is it because you speak English? Like, because you're born in Canada, you're like, that you were considered the white male?
No, I'm the white male being like the majority race and the male. So I can just sort of navigate things
just
differently.
Wait, just from you being male. So that's just sexism. Well, that's more patriarchy than racism.
Well, it's both, right? Like, I even my friend.
If you're a man, you're like on the top of the totem pole.
But there's little things that you just don't have to deal with. Like, for example, my friend, I worked with him and he's a white male from Atlanta. And when we walked across this big thoroughway to get to lunch, he would always get approached for like dirty massages. And I would never, like, it never once happened to me.
Because
look at me and they are like, oh, well, he's just an office worker. But if they see a white guy, they're like, he's a tourist. Like, I can get him for a couple $100 kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I remember that. And then now, being here, like, you've been here, like, what? What is it, 2 years now you've been here?
Almost.
I remember you asking me, like, when the pandemic started, if I'd noticed a difference.
In what? Because
it was in how I was being treated on the street and just with the racism happening. Yeah, I remember you asked me that. And I was like, I haven't been out at all. And then you said that you had gone out with someone. You weren't sure if she was targeting you or if she was just
in
her own world.
I kind of think in retrospect, she was just a little bit out of her mind.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but are you more aware of that now, like being here, like there is a difference that you do feel othered here than you were in China?
I think I do feel that. It's not something I'm comfortable with. It's not something I'm not used to because I grew up here, but it is weird to think that I became comfortable with it, that I don't have, that it's not natural necessarily that I should be looked upon as an other, or that I should look up at myself as an other, you know? Like I still feel like, for example, when I play hockey with your husband and I feel like the language in the locker room and it is very, it's very different and it's not.
Yes, it is.
Like I love hockey and you know, I've loved hockey since whatever, but it is a very different atmosphere in there compared to when I play other sports. For example, I play Ultimate Frisbee and like there's a lot of Asians who play Ultimate Frisbee and there's a certain sense of inclusion there that I don't really, I mean, the hockey community is great and everything, but it's just a certain, just the way people talk and a little bit like more maybe progressive attitude
Because there's more minorities there. If I play, ultimate frisbee.
Yeah, yeah. Like I do feel like hockey is actually super white, and I think that even though I like the sport more than frisbee, I feel more accepted in the frisbee community.
I totally believe you, and I totally understand that. Like go ahead.
It's maybe not a thing that I thought of before.
Mm-hmm. It's that whole concept of like, when do I feel othered? And for me, it happened when I left Vancouver, because Vancouver has such a huge Asian population. You and I went to high schools, mostly Asian, you know, and I went to Queens and I was the only person of color in the drama department, except for Isabel Lai, who was a stage manager. But she wasn't an actor, right? So, and I did feel that other and othered in just those tiny ways of just like the joking about, ooh, like the Chinese cooking club. Like, are you going to go join that, Elena? Like, I'm like, oh, wow. Like everyone's really like on top of these, like reminding me constantly that I'm Asian. That's when I noticed it, like is when I went to Queens, and because there just weren't a lot of minorities. I mean, like now, I mean, you've got you and Ram. Is that it? How's your class now? Like I graduated a bunch of white girls.
Well, I mean, our group, Ram and I, our group is, what is it like? Maybe there's two Caucasians in our group. Mm. Yeah.
Yep.
And one of them is Jewish. So she's also, you know, understands a little bit of the minority sort of background.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think our program is, I think it varies by geography. I would say that like there's at least one Markham team that is almost all Chinese, I think. So, but like in the West or in Vancouver, there's much more like Caucasians. So I think it just is regional, and I don't know.
Our program it's a thing. Is national. It's like I don't know why that is. Is it why minorities more drawn to studying like in a city than like Kings? I don't know what it like.
I think
like
it's just
what it is that determines the makeup.
I think it's just where people live, right? So like Markham, there's much more Asian population, so there's more Asian students in that group, right? But
yeah.
Anyways, you were speaking about Isabel. Do you guys still keep in touch? Who are some people that maybe you relied on, or maybe give you some good sort of direction, like?
You know, it's weird. I graduated like over 10 years. Oh my God. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, I almost swore. I graduated like over 10 years ago from Queens, and I went for my 10 year reunion. I went back to Queens for homecoming, and it was awkward. It was awkward. And then like, I just felt like an outsider when I saw everyone, and I mean, that could have just been me or whatever. But I just kind of left and was like, I'm done. Like, I don't need to go back now. But the people that I do keep in touch with are actually my housemates. There was like six of us that lived in a big house together on Johnson, 529 Johnson. And, we visited the house. There were like a bunch of like naked men running around. They put on their clothes, and then I got to see my old room, and you know, it was more sticky and smelled more like beer. That's gross. Yeah, it was very sticky. But I keep in touch like more so with my housemates. Like we've gone to each other's like weddings and stuff like that. So
you feel much more like you have your own little community, and that's not really like a sort of, it's beyond like what diversity efforts or race or anything like that.
The community from like from my house, you mean, or the community at the drama department? Like,
I mean, I guess you're like your experience coming up through the ranks, right? So like, I don't know, but I personally, like sometimes when I am in a professional environment, I see someone who's of, you know, Chinese Asian background, I'll gravitate towards them a little bit more. And like, maybe it's easier to strike up a conversation, and they can give me little tips or insider information, and I can do the same on my end. Mm-hmm. That's something I think I would guess is pretty common. I know I do it. I wonder if that's happened to you, and if that's something that you rely on, or how much you rely on it.
Like gravitating towards minorities for establishing community.
just in your career progression, right? Because there's different landmines that you have to look out for that maybe others don't have to look out for, or stay away from that person because they're this or that kind of thing.
Yeah, I've always navigated that on my own and my own like intuition with who to trust and who are good people and who is just a professional and relationship and what's just like you know, and what's like this could be like a long-term friend kind of thing. I've never done well with big groups of friends. Like, I just like, there are some people that like have their huge crew that they like their ride or die crew. I have ride or die individual friends. Like I more so than like developing, like having like a traveling troupe of friends. Fair enough. like, you know, like you're like, you'd be one of them, you know, but like, I don't really hang out with the other people that we would hang out with as a group, but I kept you and I have like I have best friends that have supported me like through all of this, my whole career. And I think I was talking to Brendan about this. Like, I think the reason why these friends are my friends is because they don't spend so much time being impressed with what I do. Like, that doesn't define who I am. Like, you're not my friend because I was in a bunch of stuff. Like, I booked a movie. Like when I told you I booked the movie, you were like, oh, cool. Like, cool.
Like, I feel like I was more happy than that.
Like, no, but you were happy. You were happy. Like, cool. Like it was cool, but it wasn't like, oh my God, like where, like it was just a thing. It's a thing that I do, but it doesn't define me. And that's the important thing, I think, with being an actor, is that this industry is so crazy and acting is what we love, but it is not who you are. It is what you do. And so you need to find friends and your community that love and respect who you are and not what you do. That's the distinction. Like, what you need is this person more into what I do or who I really am, and all of my like crazy rants that I went on before we went on this podcast, where I just started ranting about I'm not holding myself back. We're talking about race. I'm not talking about queens as much as I want. Blah 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 blah. That I can just like be crazy and say like what and be uncensored, and you're not gonna like judge me for it. You know what I mean?
I judge you long ago.
Friendship is.
I'm
you judge me. You judge me, but like you judge me for a second and then you move on. Then you judge me about something else and you move on. You know what I mean?
I'm here to keep you grounded.
Don't hold anything. You are. You really are. You really are. As am I. I'm here to make sure your head doesn't explode, because now you're, you know, doing podcasts and now this studying at my alma mater and
we'll this have very small big, podcast. Yes.
All your big business ventures that happen. I'll be like, I was there first.
You were there first.
I was.
So do you feel like your ethnicity, background, upbringing, any of that, can you think of instances where it was helpful? Because we sort of focus a little bit more on the negative side, but I don't think that's all there is.
Where it's been helpful. Well, I mean, there's been some great like pieces of work that I've gotten to be a part of. Like, I mean, this is now kind of like corny that I think about it. I was like, I got to play the Saigon. Like that was cool for me. That was really, really, that's a big musical. And that was a dream role. That was Miss Saigon was the first time I saw an Asian woman on stage. And I couldn't stop crying that whole, I was in grade 11 and I cried from the very beginning to the very end sobbing. So much of it was like seeing this, an Asian woman, and not just an Asian woman playing a thing in the background, someone with a story that's about resilience and fighting and sacrifice and someone who's a fighter who fights through everything and is a mother and every, like that's a fierce character. And so like getting to play that was like one of the first things I did after I graduated from uni, is I got to play Kim and Miss Saigon. But I always found it weird that they let that the final bow is open to the engineer. Kim doesn't get the last bow. I always hated that. Bugs me to this day. I'm like, no, the engineer, which was originally played by a white guy, by what's his name? That famous white guy, Jonathan Pryce played the engineer. He was a white guy and they put prosthetics so his eyes got look more Asian. And he got the final bow when Miss Saigon opened. I'm like, no, this, I got the central character in that, the person who does all the work that we're here to see is an Asian woman and she deserves a final bow. Screw
it. Is Miss Saigon typically, traditionally played by an Asian person or is it?
Now it is. Now the engineer is it's like, no, they will never pull a Jonathan Pryce like that again.
But the woman though, the female role.
Oh.
That's always been an Asian woman. I mean, yes. I know the character is an Asian woman, but they always like cast an Asian woman.
I mean, how many productions? I was in Sudbury doing a musical and there was a community production of Miss Saigon that was done and it was a white girl playing Kim. But then there was an Asian woman, but she was playing Ellen. It was very confusing.
they don't see race, Elena.
Like Kim is now like in the big productions. Yeah. No, she's always played by an Asian woman. So yeah, I mean, of course there's definitely like it is the biggest plus. I love that I'm an Asian woman. If I was given another shot at life and like, you could be born like as any gender or ethnicity you want as a second go, I'd want to be a woman and I'd want to be Asian again. I freaking love it. I love the upbringing. I love getting to tell stories about my upbringing, which is like something that I get to do in this film. That's coming up.
So tell me about that.
Joyous.
You're playing a Filipino woman for the first time, professionally.
For the first time professionally. And it sucks because I thought they would have announced all the casting by now, but they haven't. So we can't name it, but it was, I booked this role last month. I found out that I got it. I finally get to play myself in a movie about like my family, my background specifically, first time in my life. And I'd auditioned for a lot of stuff, but this was the one I wanted. And I was on set doing Jan. I play Kale on Jan. And my manager called me on my phone and she told me, and I started sobbing. I haven't been like that with a role, like booking a role like that. I wasn't even like that when I booked Kale. I didn't cry, but I sobbed. And it was in a lot of things, like it was like just a few days after like the attacks, the spa shootings had happened. And I was in Jan. I'm the only, well, that's the lie. I'm not the only, diverse person in Jan, but it was still difficult for me to process that and be able to go back to work and pretend everything was fine. Like I needed to focus on the last few weeks of shooting. So I just was kind of putting that at the back of my mind and trying not to ignore it. But these things still happen and they still affect us like on another level. We don't even, you know, and so when I booked it, it was just like this, because when these things happen, it's just like, I want to be an activist. I want to like do something and create change and speak out about stuff. And then like, you say something on Twitter and then more racism comes at you and you want to talk about that. And there's so many ways to show your activism on fronts. And I just didn't know what to do. And then I booked this and it was like a gift because there's different kinds of activism. I've learned that I am not the best activist on Twitter. I don't have the strength to like to combat all those mean tweets that come back and the racist tweets that come my way when I tweet something about, I'm not strong, and Twitter has never been a safe place for me to have these kinds of discussions. Like there are different forms of activism. There's education, educating young people, having conversations like we're having. And as an actor, our form of activism is getting to do these kinds of work where we take up space and we create something that takes up space in Hollywood and says, here's a movie about us. And we're not just background characters. Like this is, we are fully formed people with a story and we're going to take up this space, these how many hours, so that people can see us and acknowledge us, that we are full human beings. You know, and instead of just constantly being in the background all the time, being valued and getting to tell a story and take up space, like that's a form of activism. So that you know, the next person, a minority, a little Filipino, a mixed Filipino, whatever, a little girl watching, like it gets to see like on the big screen, like herself, and have that moment. To not be afraid to take up space, because I feel that for me personally, that's one thing that I struggle with is taking up space. I feel like, and we were talking about this before the podcast started, that I, I, I want to be good to work with. I want people to like me. When I get a great opportunity, I don't want to screw it up or lose it or offend anyone. And so I end up making myself small and kind of fitting within the model minority myth of I'm good to work with and I'm amenable and I will bend backwards and I will do everything for whatever, instead of owning my own space and speaking my mind and not caring what people think. That's always been, as a minority, the thing that I've grappled with. And it's something that I'm try to be aware of, like, as much as on a daily basis. I'm just like, am I holding my opinion back? Am I trying to be small? Am I not taking up space right now? Especially in my work, I do that as well. That's just one thing that I have worked on.
But yeah, that's super interesting, because I think when you're sort of first through the door, there's different challenges that come with it. I mean, the good part is every time you do something, you create space for someone else to do it after you, right?
Mm-hmm.
The tougher part of it is you have people like, I don't know, like Ken Jeong, who playing whatever role it was in The Hangover, which is a little bit maybe, I don't know, I would say backwards. And that I can understand. He is so good, but it is like kind of racist, right? I don't know. It's just because he's Asian doesn't mean he's not racist.
Yeah.
And I can understand his personal motivations of trying to get ahead and forging a path for people behind him, but also
follow the work,
balancing all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
But tell me about when you read the script for this movie, there must have been a lot of little moments in there that were really poignant because you can relate to this or that, or your relationship with your parents or whatever it is, right?
Yes, absolutely. That's the thing. You were talking about, you know, The Hangover and like, you know, racist parts. And I said, like, you got to go and follow where the work is. Right. But sometimes the script that I read for this film is fantastic. And I could see myself in it, but I have read several scripts before that have offended me. And I'm just like, I'm not going to follow the work in this instance. There was, you know, I think particularly with this being Filipino and having this movie about a Filipino family, and the other scripts that I've read with Filipinos, I read a script. I don't know why, like, when people find out I'm Filipino, they're like, they want me to play a Filipino nanny. Like, I don't know. I'm just like, and there was I read it, this one script, and they were really pushing for me to do it. And it was like a Jewish family, and they had it. There was one character who's a Filipino nanny, and she's been with the family for generations, and she speaks in a thick accent. And then she teaches the kid, like, for his bat mitzvah, his bar mitzvah or whatever. He reads the Torah in a Filipino accent, and everybody laughs. Like, because ha ha ha, because you have Filipino nanny. And I'm just like, what is it about me and my body of work that makes you think I am the perfect person to play a Filipino nanny that's been with a family for generations? I'm in, like, in my 20s at this time, other than the fact that I'm Filipino. And like, this, you're creating this stock character, and like, that's it. These stock characters, I've had another Filipino script where, like, these, no one can tell these two Filipino women apart. And the audition scene was them talking about adobo and being like, "Ooh, how do you make your adobo? What is, oh, you know, adobo is like chicken with like soy sauce." And I'm like, is this actually a scene where you get to, you're trying to explain to white people what adobo is? Like, this is like, you can tell, like, I'm still like, so wound up about this kind of stuff. But like, this is the kind of stuff of these stock characters. And I was saying, like, even like with Filipino nannies, like, there's a whole story about the Filipino women that come here that raise your children that you're not even touching, that you just think they're this, you just think they're a funny character in your story that has an accent and makes people laugh. They are so much more than that. Like, it's the contributions that they do and the sacrifice and everything that story is, like, no one's touched that story. Maybe they have, and I haven't seen the film, but it's seeing Filipinos as stock characters, usually with the funny accent, that I can't. And this is a struggle with the actor that was on Schitt's Creek talks about that he was, you know, he put on the accent. He's the only Indian guy, right? Right. And that was it. And he never had a fully formed story, about why he's there or whatever. It was just kind of for laughs and stuff. I mean, in their defense, Schitt's Creek was really about the four characters in that family. Nobody else really got a full thing. But anyway, but that's what the difference has been for me with these kinds of scripts, where I see where it's the difference. What's truthful and what's not truthful. What's truthful is that every single person is the lead character in their own movie. Every single person has something interesting and has something to say and deserves to have people sit and watch them and them to take up their space and take their moment. That's the truth. What isn't the truth is that people are just background players in white led stories that were just there as decoration. That's not truthful.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the switch that's happening now, right? Is that people of different backgrounds are being given the opportunity to tell their own stories instead mm-hmm. of the stories being filtered through whatever Hollywood machine there is, right? Mm-hmm. And then the Hollywood machine, I guess, it still has traditional tendencies and probably run by maybe more people of the majority. So mm-hmm. where do you think this goes then?
You know what? Where does this go from here? It's up to us to create work for ourselves and not be afraid to, again, not be afraid to take up space. These stories won't be told unless we write them, unless we do them, unless we get them made. I think I'm seeing now some really great creators that are minorities that are creating things right now and getting things made.
Do you see more of that stuff coming through though? I feel like Kim's Convenience is sort of broken through a little bit. Marvel's mm-hmm. doing that movie about, was it Shang-Chi or something? Mm-hmm. Crazy Rich Asians. There's more of it in the limelight. So is there more stuff that you're seeing, or people that you work with in theater, or just acquaintances that are more pushing towards that? People maybe who wouldn't have written something that are now it might get actually picked up, so I'm going to write it.
Yeah, absolutely. The things that I'm auditioning for are very exciting. The people involved, the things that I'm seeing that just with my own eyes that I see that I get, is very promising. But that question of what you said, maybe it will get picked up. Maybe I should write that script. You should just write the script anyway. Just doesn't matter who gets picks it up or where it goes, just write it. And even now, even I was thinking I should write something for me. What would my story be? It's I have a story, it's seeing yourself as the center of your own story and writing it. I even now with everything going on, even I'm thinking that of myself, creating my own work, which I've done. I've written an album and I've produced a small one woman show that I, toured and, I haven't written a screenplay. I'd love to do that. I'd love to write a book one day. I don't know about what. No, I do know about what, but I'm not going to tell it or else because someone's going to steal my idea. I do have ideas and that's the thing. Instead of waiting for everyone else to catch up, you got to do it on your own. You got to write your own thing. Cool. Yeah.
That's really good advice. So Elena, do you have any last advice for maybe Queen's grads, future Queen's grads?
For Queen's students right now studying at, what are they called? The Gaelic, sign the bang again, whatever. It's tricky because I feel for the people that are going through this in a pandemic. Not being able to do all the stuff that I did. I mean, I was so involved in like Queen's Players and it was just so, I think it was so easy to get involved at Queen's. And that's why I picked that as a university, is because it didn't matter what department you were in, that you were, you could do a drama major. And I did a drama major with people from all different types of departments. So now that I say that, actually, make friends with people like not just in your department, like work. This is a podcast about diversity. And that's, I guess it stretches to my advice that, you know, if you have your, you know, we were talking about core groups of friends. What was great about my experience is that I lived with someone in business, in history, in engineering, and it was all different departments, and we all had our own like friends within our departments we would hang out with, but we were family. And I think it is very telling that today the people that I keep in touch with, that I'm the closest with, are my housemates. I think it's when you talk about diversity, we're not just talking about skin tone. I think it's diversity of different experiences and backgrounds and everything, orientations, how people identify, just as many diverse friends and people in different experiences that you can have in your friend circle, and encourage you to connect in that way. I think you'll take that into the great beyond for the better.
That's a good point. We had an interview with another, like a high leadership person. And she told us that diversity isn't just what things look like, it's what they sound like. So if you're getting the same feedback from everybody, then maybe you got to change it up.
I love that.
Yeah.
Love that. It's not what you look like, it's what you sound like.
Well, it's both, right? Like you also want to see.
Yeah, not just. Yeah.
But yeah, if everyone's just saying the same thing, then it's not really, you're not getting any good sort of diversity of opinion, any good feedback, any good extra insight, right? Mm-hmm. It's just
diversity of thought.
Absolutely. And being open to that. I think there are some people like, well, instead of saying like, I like using I statements, that it's nice to have a group of friends that parrot each other and tell you how great you are and how great your ideas are. It's a very safe place. But to succeed, it is about diversity of thought and having different kinds of opinions and challenge. So, and to challenge your own constantly. I 100% agree. I love that.
Cool. All right. Anything else?
Yo, it has been so great chatting with you, Jefferson. So happy you're a friend in my life. I'm sorry. I'm happy that you've moved to Toronto so we can chill and hang.
Well, we can't, but
but like we can do this, like, you know, over Zoom. I am grateful to you for teaching me sourdough bread, because that's really changed my life. Ram, it was so nice to meet you. You've a really great background there. I really appreciate that effort. I think Toronto's a beautiful city. I'm happy to be here. And watch Jan on Crave and Hulu. Season 3 will be coming soon, and it's so freaking funny. Holy crap.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Elena.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. CFRC and Queen's University sit on the traditional lands of the Haudenosaunee and Anishinaabe peoples.
Future Majority is supported by the EDII Blue Sky Initiative of Smith School of Business. And we'd also like to acknowledge the Faculty of Engineering and Applied Sciences, as well as CFRC, for their contribution.